people around the world are very interested in the divisions in this country.
Asia closely watches the U.S. election. It's Wednesday, November 7th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Coming up, optimism ahead of new North Korean talks. America votes. Asian Americans have their say. China lowers fuel prices as it invites outside companies. Repairing instead of disposing, and dogs with cameras. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Americans flocked to polling places Tuesday to vote in what has been termed one of the most important midterm or non-presidential elections in U.S. history. And there has been major interest around the globe. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Tom Nagorski, Executive Vice President of the New York-based Asia Society, about the interest being expressed in Asia.
I think there's probably more interest, and this parallels, frankly, the interest you're seeing among all Americans as well. But there's, my history doesn't go back that far, but I can't imagine that people in Asia have ever had anything like the interest that they have. They probably didn't even know in some corners what a midterm election was. But I think I'm not out on a limb by saying that it's unprecedented in terms of a midterm election. And I think that's something we have seen reflected since November of 2016 in terms of the interest level in all things that were emanating from the Trump White House. And that's irrespective, frankly, of geography and probably irrespective of point of view, but just the extent to which this administration has scrambled a lot of paradigms and assumptions about policy in Asia, about the United States' place, not just in Asia, but around the world. And, you know, a metric that probably isn't worth anything, but I'll share it anyway, is just the level of interest among Asian diplomats here in New York who want to ask us questions when we're usually the ones asking them questions, given what we do. However you want to look at it, it's sky high, and I'm sure we'll be getting lots of questions and inquiries in the days ahead.
What are the most important issues to the people with whom you speak or with whom you know or what you hear?
I would say to start with, there's interest in something that has nothing to do with a particular policy, but I think people around the world are very interested in the divisions in this country as observers, and I think they're also interested in the extent to which a divided United States has difficulty getting things done, and more specifically, in the current politics of the current White House, is in not all places, but in many parts of the world, far less engaged than it used to be. We are just a few weeks away from the APEC meetings and other critical meetings in Asia, where Mr. Trump himself, the president, has sort of opted out. And, you know, that's that may not be exactly front and center in the minds of most Americans as they go to the polls today. It's obviously a symbol, at least, of something that is of great interest in Asia. Now, looking at actual policies and areas, of course, that will depend a little bit on where on that vast continent you throw the proverbial dart and who you're asking. But one manageable way to look at it, I think, is to look at the places where Donald Trump's foreign policy has turned upside down the policies of his predecessors and really, in some cases, changed basic understandings that were in place for decades. When you look at policy makers and leaders around Asia, I think there is an interest in knowing whether some stability will come in the years ahead from the United States.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Tom Nagorski, Executive Vice President of the New York-based Asia Society. The results of the U.S. election could shift the balance of power in Washington and alter the next 2 years of Donald Trump's presidency. All 435 seats in the House of Representatives are at stake, plus 35 of the 100 U.S. Senate seats and 36 of the 50 state governorships. We'll have more on a race involving a Korean-American candidate in just a few minutes on VOA Asia. These are among some of the top stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Pompeo to meet with top North Korean Thursday in New York. China hosts Import Expo, pledges to buy more. Facebook says human rights report shows it should do more in Myanmar. Indonesian startup uses road safety to drive women's empowerment. In China, female pilots strain to hold up half the sky. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. As U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo plans to meet his North Korean counterpart Kim Jong-chol in New York Thursday, America's top military officer suggested the United States will have to change its military posture on the Korean Peninsula if denuclearization talks with Pyongyang advance. The chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, Marine General Joseph Dunford, did not provide any detail on what change in posture might look like, but he said the North's missile and nuclear capabilities have not changed. The U.S. has already suspended large-scale joint military exercises this year. Go Myung-hyun is a research fellow at the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty that while a sense of stability has followed the North's year-long halt to its missile and nuclear testing, South Koreans are aware diplomatic efforts to rid the peninsula of the nuclear threat will take a long time.
Given the history of difficult negotiations with North Korea, I don't think this negotiation round will be smooth. I mean, there could be some progress being made in terms of scheduling the next U.S. DPRK summit, but then I think the biggest sticking point will be how much North Korea is ready to concede in terms of denuclearization. It's clear that North Korea doesn't want to provide full access to all its nuclear facilities and materials in the country. And U.S. is still insisting getting a so-called nuclear list, the list of assets and materials and weapons that North Korea possesses. So I don't think there will be a material progress in that regard. But on the other hand, North Korea could be willing to provide some gestures, such as allowing full-scale inspections to Dongchangmi missile test site, or even like the Yongbyon nuclear facility. So this could be taken as an important gesture by the U.S. government, and this could lead to eventually to scheduling of the second U.S. DPRK summit.
The North has threatened to resume nuclear activity late last week, suggesting that it's time to lift economic sanctions. Does South Korea want that to happen?
Yeah, I think the South Korean government's position is to support denuclearization and lift the sanctions if North Korea makes a significant commitment to denuclearization. But on the other hand, South Korean government also wants to speed up the inter-Korean dialogue, as well as the inter-Korean economic cooperation. And that's a very important electoral platform on the part of President Moon. I think South Korea would like to provide some gestures of economic assistance in North Korea to reward North Korea's good behavior in terms of not having carried out significant provocations since earlier this year. So in that sense, South Korea would like to see some relaxation of sanctions on the part of the U.S., not significant one, but probably a symbolic gesture, but that I don't think will be forthcoming from the United States government this time.
General Dunford suggested that the rapprochement will result in a change in the military posture of the United States on the Korean Peninsula. What do you think?
It will be logical for the U.S. forces to change its military posture along in the peninsula if there's a significant breakthrough in the inter-Korean engagement, also as in denuclearization. But on the other hand, what General Dunford has suggested could also signal that the United States government is ready to reduce the number of troops based in the peninsula in South Korea. And that could come across as a too significant a measure that takes place too soon, given that the denuclearization process is going to take a long time. I mean, it's just a best-case scenario in many ways. So if the U.S. changes its posture towards North Korea too soon, then I think that's actually going to contribute to instability in the peninsula in the long run.
Go Myung-hyun said South Korea, like the United States, is concerned the North will drag out diplomacy in order to expand its nuclear arsenal, but said it is a risk worth taking for a peaceful resolution. He also said President Moon Jae-in is convinced North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is sincere about denuclearization. Happening now in Asia, final preparations are being made for Friday's meeting between U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and a senior North Korean official in New York City. The State Department says Pompeo and Kim Jong-chol will discuss making progress toward achieving the final and fully verified denuclearization of North Korea. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. As ballots are now being cast in perhaps the most important midterm elections in recent U.S. history, we sent some of our staff out to see what was happening. Anna Cook went to a polling station in Northern Virginia. Hi, Anna.
Hi.
What did you see out there?
So I went to around 3 to 4 polling stations in Northern Virginia, and in Virginia today was a very rainy, dreary day. and we were there in the afternoon, so that's not usually the busy time at polling stations, but quite a lot of turnout. There are a variety of voters there, a lot of Asian American voters as well, a lot of excitement for Election Day today.
I understand you spoke with some of the voters out there.
Yeah, I spoke to one Korean woman who was really excited for Thomas Oh. He's the first Korean-American candidate in that district. She felt like there's not enough Asian-American candidates running for office, and she was very happy to see a familiar face. But also, I talked to another Filipino woman named Florencia Seraltra, and she said she was a big Trump supporter and that she is a very ardent Republican as well. So she was really happy to see Thomas. But she was even happier that he, like herself, is an Asian American running for office.
I come from the Philippines. I came here in 1984 with my Turkish parents. I feel good because I was surprised that I will meet him in person because he looks very nice.
Yeah.
And he's Korean. Yeah. I expect that whatever he promised, I believe that he can deliver what he promised. Hopefully he will do that.
Research data tells us American, Asian American candidates and voters are more likely to affiliate themselves as a Democrat. In Virginia's 8th Congressional District, Thomas Oh, a Korean American and also a military veteran, is the Republican challenger against heavily favored Democratic incumbent Don Beyer. Anna Cook spoke with Thomas Oh as he campaigned outside polling stations on his policy priorities, both as a Republican and a second-generation immigrant.
Well, hi, my name is Thomas Oh. I'm running for United States Congress. I'm an Army veteran, an Army Airborne Ranger. I'm a 1.5-generation Korean-American, born and raised here locally in Northern Virginia. I just left active duty military last year, and I'm now in the reserves. I decided to run for Congress recently because I invested 8 years defending this country. I'm worried about the future of this country, so that's why I decided to run.
Can you tell me a little bit about values are the most important for you for this whole campaign?
I think the most important thing is you always have to remember why you decided to run for office. I feel that a lot of people first initially start to run for office or, with an intent of doing something good, but they often succumb to maybe certain pressures, whether it's other political pressures or financial pressures. You know, for me, I want to give the government back to individual citizens, so, represent the people.
In the Republican Party right now and with Trump and his recent speech on immigration, it seems like they're appealing a lot to policies on immigration, healthcare, and things like that. Are those your priorities as well?
My priorities really comes down to better representation for the people. And I say, you know, people before politics. But my biggest concern really is the $21 trillion of debt that we have. The United States is basically almost 10 times their annual tax revenue in debt, which is huge. About 7.8% of our budget is paid, we're just paying off interest, which is huge. And, you know, I also talk about immigration too, and as a Korean American, 1.5 generation. And I think it really comes down to the American dream.
Korean American and Republican House candidate Thomas Oh. Coming up, fuel and imports are on China's business radar. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news from VOA Asia. Facebook says a human rights report it commissioned on its presence in Myanmar showed it had not done enough to prevent its social network from being used to incite violence. The report recommends Facebook more strictly enforce its content policies, increase engagement with both Myanmar officials and civil society groups. Engage daily with our page at VOA Asia Facebook. As VOA Asia continues, fuel prices edge lower, while international companies show off in China. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
China has made a slight cut in retail prices for gasoline and diesel. According to the NDRC, one of the country's most powerful economic planning agencies, gasoline was cut by around $54 per ton and diesel by about $52 per ton, which means consumers will pay about 4 cents less per liter at the pump for either. While many feared an immediate spike in prices due to new U.S. sanctions on Iranian oil exports and outages in key oil-producing countries like Libya, Venezuela, Nigeria, Mexico, and Angola, those fears appear to be unfounded. Experts say international oil prices have instead fallen due to the U.S. oil stockpile rise, a slowing global economy, and mounting trade tensions between the U.S. and China that are likely to impact demand. The NDRC has asked major Chinese oil companies, including China National Petroleum, China Petrochemical, and China National Offshore Oil, to implement the new pricing policy. It predicts that the global oil prices will continue to be volatile in the short term. More than 3,000 companies from 130 countries are attending China's International Import Expo, which runs from November 5th to the 10th. Many African businesses and governments are using the expo to try and boost exports to China and address the trade imbalance. Haitham El Sadani is the managing director of Sadat Agrofruit.
For Egypt, this year, especially this year, will be competitive because our prices and will be less than America because of customs.
Experts say Chinese President Xi Jinping is using the trade fair as part of his effort to rebrand China as a welcoming market and a positive global business force. With the exception of Egypt, Morocco, and South Africa, manufacturing sectors across most African economies tend to be small and face a host of challenges, from poor logistics to high costs of energy. Many countries are trying to step beyond those challenges and get into the Chinese market. Khaled Shaki is the export director at Kellogg Company.
Challenge is to export here, okay, is if our products is matching with the Chinese culture and taste or not, okay? We are here to test the market. We're here to know the culture of the people.
According to the Chinese Ministry of Commerce, China's exports to Africa reached $94.7 billion in 2017, whereas China's imports from Africa hit $75.3 billion. African countries hope the expo will help address that trade imbalance. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This News from VOA Asia. The top U.S. military officer says the United States would have to start making changes to its military posture on the Korean Peninsula over time if talks with North Korea advance. Marine General Joseph Dunford, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, says with more diplomatic success, quote, the more uncomfortable we will be in the military space. Comfortably visit our space at VOA Asia Facebook. Now on VOA Asia, according to the most recent Environmental Protection Agency data, about 262 million tons of municipal solid waste were generated in the United States in 2015. But while trash proliferation remains a global problem, there's a growing trend to help combat it. Repair cafes are cropping up around the world, building community while teaching people how to fix their broken items instead of just tossing them out. VOA's Joe Craig recently visited the Twins Ace Hardware store in Fairfax, Virginia, to talk to participants at a repair cafe.
Learning how to play the guitar.
Use the first fret, right?
Right.
But this isn't a music lesson or a jam session, at least not officially.
I don't know what the problem is, but I guess it's part of my learning journey.
A learning journey because her guitar was a gift and one in need of repairs. So Manu Ramanan stopped by this repair cafe in Fairfax, Virginia for some help.
I think we're just trying to change how people think about stuff, what our expectations are. Rather than being consumers, we work better with what we have.
And guitars aren't the only things being fixed here. People bring their broken lamps, watches, blankets, and many other items to volunteers who put their handy person skills to work, all free of charge.
It is people learning how to repair things for themselves. We're here to teach and to help people learn how to repair things and keep things being used rather than in the landfill or thrown away on the side of the road.
While at the same time building a sense of community.
Knitting is not really that complicated. I can fix something fairly easily, but there are enough people who don't know how to knit that they are amazed. It's like magic to them. And I'm able to give them back their mother's sweater that had a hole or something, and they're just thrilled.
The first repair cafe opened in Amsterdam in 2009. Now, the website advertises more than 1,600 repair cafes globally, mending material objects while creating new friendships. Jill Craig, VOA News, Fairfax, Virginia.
We've all heard about how surveillance robots can scope out an area before police or rescue personnel head into a potentially dangerous situation. But some canine officers in the U.S. states of Oregon and Wisconsin are getting some great help from camera-equipped dogs. VOA's Kevin Enix sniffs out the story.
Canine police units, often on the front lines in dangerous situations, now have a new way to keep in contact and keep each other safe. They can use cameras mounted on police dogs.
And now I can see if it's getting in harm's way and I can recall him, whereas before he might get himself into trouble, go in deeper than he should.
Until now, the trusty bark was a way for sniffer dogs to alert their handlers of potential trouble. Now with these cameras, they can see exactly what the trouble might be.
Once before, I would have to go into it blind, and I wouldn't know, what's he doing in the other room? He sounds like he's interested in something. He's starting to bark. Is he barking because someone's under a bed?
The camera dogs also allow cops to keep a safe distance, minimizing the potential for panic on both sides.
If we have a really close encounter with armed people, it doesn't work out well for anyone. If we can gain distance, it gives us lots of options to negotiate and de-escalate.
The problem is the cameras are expensive, in some cases more than $10,000 per unit. But police in Muskego, Wisconsin say they're worth every penny.
Knowing what the suspect's doing and being able to see what the suspect's doing, being able to get a layout of a area, whether it's out in the woods or it's in a house or it's in a business, the camera will start to give us that layout so when officers have to go into that environment, they can do it more safely.
The Portland, Oregon Police Department is using money seized in drug cases to buy cameras for its officers. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You know, with technology, you can hear our program pretty much anywhere in the world. You can hear us in many different ways. One of our favorite is on the radio. PSU Radio, Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University in Thailand is one of those stations across Asia. We thank everyone there who's tuned in today. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, John Ellison, managing editor, Diane Gal, and our VOA Asia team. That's Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.